Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Knowles podcast and follow at Front Row Knowles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
All right, second half of the show. Was it a good locker room speech at halftime there, Keith? You feel all right for the second half? Are you in good shape?
I feel the cheesiest.
We're going to go three and out on this first drive? Or are we actually
We're going to convert a first down and then get a holding penalty and then get another holding penalty, and it'll be first and 33.
So I teed this up with Bob before the break, and no time like now to address the topic. When Florida State plays LSU next year in the Superdome on Labor Day weekend, is Jimbo Fisher going to be the coach of LSU?
Well, three things come to mind. Number one, you know, LSU's got to get rid of Coach Ed. And, you know, I'm not sure that that's a given. As Bob mentioned, however, and of course, you and your family are much more plugged into that. They've got a horrendous schedule. But, you know, we've seen him pull some magical things. I don't know that this will be one of those. But, yes, that has to happen. Secondly, you know, because we don't pay attention, we don't know. I've not heard. I've not talked to anybody. There may not be anybody in Tallahassee area. How happy is Jimbo at A&M? I don't know. I don't know if he's been given all the resources that he thinks he wants. That was part of the issue about being uncomfortable at Florida State. We all know about his contract and his contract extension, but as you and I have talked privately, you know, there may be an opportunity or a time when he kind of swallows his pride. Jimmy Sexton, his agent, to, you know, he may be willing, as Bob mentioned, to take lesser money early on and build it up because he wants to get back to LSU. And the third part goes into the second part. You and I both know that in a little bit of time we've spent with him, you glean the one area absent Florida State, and I don't know where FSU ranks in that, but the one place he always talked about was Baton Rouge. And that by far was his best place, his fondest memories of coaching. So I don't know. It makes for an interesting topic.
One of the first in-depth conversations I had with Jimbo, it had to be, I'm gonna paint it as spring of 2011. And it was on a couple of his booster tour stops where I was pinch hitting for Gene. And so we were traveling together. And as you know, anybody who's been around Jimbo knows, no matter what the topic is on the table, it always goes back to football within about 4 minutes. Whether you're talking about your favorite meal or your favorite travel location or politics or whatever, four minutes.
Deer hunting. He'll take deer hunting.
Deer hunting.
To football.
4 minutes into the conversation, you're talking about X and O's and how he schemed something open in 1997 or whatever. That's the way he's wired. But we were talking about recruiting, deeper than recruiting, he was talking about good jobs. I know what it was. The Tennessee job, which has been open about every 18 months or every 2 years for about the last two decades, it was open at the time. And so the tenor of the conversation was this: Tennessee's not a good job. This is him. It's got all the resources, doesn't have any athletes. If you're in Tennessee, you got to leave the state, so you're always second fiddle when it comes to recruiting. You got to go to Georgia. You got to go to Florida. You got to go to other states. So it continued from there. He said, there's only two states in the country where there's one program and it's the top dog. I said, all right. He said, Ohio and Louisiana. You know which state has the most NFL players per capita in the country? I said, which one? He said, Louisiana. And then he quoted the number. And so this is the layer beyond financial resources and his personal salary and all that. There's the actual players that you need on the field. And he's always raved about what's in Louisiana that way. And he did, as you pointed out, I don't know if romanticize is the right word, but he talked very fondly of his time in Baton Rouge. So all that said, there'll be other names in the conversation. I don't know if LSU is willing to pay $10 million a year to get him there. I think if the salary was not disclosed, I think Jimbo would coach at LSU tomorrow for minimum wage. But because there's an ego involved and people are going to know how much he's making, and because he is making $8 or $9 million a year, that'd be kind of tough to walk away from. I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised.
The other part, and Bob alluded to it, you and I are familiar with it, but the AD at Louisiana, LSU, is one of his best personal friends. And don't ever underestimate the stumbling block that also led to Jimbo leaving Florida State because of his inability to get along with the athletic director at the time?
Well, that AD is the one who hired him at Texas A&M and gave him his original $75 million contract. So that's the guy who's sitting at LSU right now. The other thing is this, and I don't know how Texas A&M will finish its season, Keith, but this goes back to the point that you're not the top dog in the state. So even though there's plenty of student athletes in the state of Texas, Texas is still the big dog, even though they haven't been very successful at all since the one title that Mack Brown won in 05 or whatever year it was. You go to LSU. So to finish that thought about Texas A&M, what if they went out and don't make the playoff? Or what if this is the best they can do is finishing number five last year, not being in the playoff, and wherever they finish this year, not being in the playoff? Well, if he goes to LSU, he's going to think in his mind, or he's going to know in his mind, that if I'm at LSU and I beat Alabama, we're going to finish and be in the playoff. So I think that could drive that decision a little bit too.
Well, the other part, you know, we talk about in today's world resources, and obviously A&M has tremendous resources, but your point is more valid. You have to have players. And I think the argument can be made that Texas A&M is not even the number two program in the state of Texas. Obviously, the Longhorns are number one, but then you got to look at what's going on at SMU. You got to look at Texas Tech. I mean, my point is there are four or five legitimate schools, and in any one year, A&M might not be number two. They might be number three. And I think your point's absolutely valid. With LSU being top dog in a very talent-rich state, and now with Jimbo having a footprint in Florida and in Texas and get after those two databases or those two recruiting hotbeds along with Louisiana, there's a lot of compelling evidence there.
As I think back about that conversation, and thanks for tuning in to Front Row Tigers for this segment, folks. We'll get back to Front Row Knowles here momentarily in our next segment, I guess. I recall it was before remember when the West Virginia job opened and everybody was concerned? This was like the first flirtation Jimbo had with another school. Everybody thought, oh, he's going to go back home. And in my head, I said, I just had a whole conversation with him. And if there ain't players in the state, he ain't going. So I never had any thought that he was going there. Now, the one thing that wasn't the case when this conversation occurred is that Dabo had not turned Clemson into what Clemson has done over the last few years, because Clemson would fit into that same bucket as Tennessee. They've got resources, but they don't have enough student athletes or enough players in the state of South Carolina. So you got to go out of the state to get them. Dabo has made that work, but I'm just telling you what Jimbo conveyed in terms of that day. So we'll see where it lands. Let's get back to FSU in our next segment, shall we?
I think that's a good idea.
I'm still going to need an annulment from my marriage for next Labor Day and the year after that, too, since we play them in Orlando that year. Front Row Knowles continues after this.
Hey, folks, Austin Hobson with Hobson Chevrolet Buick in Cairo, Georgia. Fall's here, football's here, the weather's great, and the deals are great. You got to come check out our great selection of pre-owned inventory like this 2021 GMC Yukon XL or this 2021 Chevy 2500 HD Diesel, both fully loaded. New vehicles arriving daily like this 2022 Chevy Bolt EV or this 2022 Chevy Camaro LT1 V8 with a need for speed. Come see us or check us out at HobsonChevrolet.com. Buy your new Chevrolet the Hobson way.
Getting the kids to practice on time. Remembering if it's your day to bring snacks. Making it to the game with a clean jersey. Why are simple things sometimes so complicated? Thankfully, with Auto Owners, insurance doesn't have to be one of them. Auto Owners works with independent agents who answer when you call, so you can worry about more important things, like whether your kid is going to run toward first or third base. That's simple human sense.
Your local independent Auto Owners agent is the Earl Bacon Agency. Call us at 878-2121 or visit us on the web at earlbacon.com.
Be sure to subscribe to the Front Row Knowles podcast and follow at Front Row Knowles on Twitter. Now back to at underscore Tom Block and Twitterless Keith Jones. Yes, you heard us right, in the Prime Meridian Bank Studios.
Thanks for humoring us with that last segment, Keith. We can move it forward. I will say this is a pivotal week for the Block family, because my wife is taking Nolan Baton Rouge and Tiger Stadium this weekend for the Florida LSU game. Now, he's all garnet and gold. He's all in Florida State. If Edo and the Tigers find one last stand and beat the Gators this week, could get a little dicey on the home front. You know what I'm saying?
I'm doing my dance, Tommy. I'm doing my dance.
Yeah, I know. You don't have to do it anymore. All right, let's bring it back to Florida State. What do you think the ceiling is for Jordan Travis, Keith?
You know, it's interesting because the knock on him has always been he can't throw the ball downfield. And we've seen situations where that's been the case. And then we've seen other situations where he's been absolutely unbelievable. The touchdown pass, as previously mentioned, the catch on the sideline for third down. And then you mix in that ability to run. You know, I don't know. My frustration has always been that he seems to be nicked up all the time. We referenced that earlier, and this is practice time. He's going to go out of the game, although that didn't happen Saturday, but he's going to go out of the game for a series or a play or whatever. It's really interesting because he is a very uniquely talented individual.
I was just going to interject, Keith, that the last year, probably at this time, the conversation wasn't that Jordan Travis couldn't throw downfield. The conversation was he couldn't throw, period. Like, they had a guy playing quarterback that couldn't complete the pass 10 yards. Do you remember those conversations?
That's fair. I'd forgotten about that, but that's fair.
Yeah, we've moved past it. Literally, we had conversations about whether or not the guy could throw the football. Now, he can throw the football, as we've seen. Now, taking the next step, and he did some of this last week, going through progressions, standing in the pocket. It's amazing how you can stand in the pocket a little longer when there actually is a pocket and it gets blocked up front. That kind of helps.
Funny how that works.
It's almost like, I don't think he's, you know, he's not the guy that Norvell would go get to be the poster child to run his offense. And they brought McKenzie in, they got a hotshot recruit coming in next year. And when everything, you know, when the dust settles, it may be that Jordan's just so dynamic that if he can improve in these other areas, that he's got two more years after this.
Well, we've judged him as a youngster. We've not given him time. You know, our memories are of Charlie Ward winning the Heisman Trophy. Our memories are not of him throwing eight interceptions in the first two games he started at FSU. Our memories of Winkie are winning the Heisman, not throwing six interceptions against NC State in one of his early starts. So we've not given him credit for having the opportunity to mature. The other part of it, though, that we can't discount is that the running game is a very, very kind complement to a quarterback. And with FSU's ability to run, that opens up some things. It makes those linebackers a little over-aggressive. It gives you some opportunities in intermediate routes. Makes those corners a little susceptible to double moves and crossing patterns. Don't ever discount that. So it's all part and parcel of his improvement.
I think it's a fascinating question. Now, we don't know if he'll stay healthy. And this is not to suggest that Jordan Travis is going to go unbeaten the rest of the way. But, what we saw last week at North Carolina, and we've seen it 2 years in a row, that's something. I mean, when he's out there and healthy, I mean, that's the best game Florida State has played. And in how long, Keith?
Since Jimbo, and probably 2 years before Jimbo left.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to travel with him, and there's not many times that I'm standing on the sideline in the fourth quarter. Side note, wondering why Mack Brown is running the four corners offense of Dean Smith instead of an actual hurry-up offense when they're down three scores. But that's for –
that was a little peculiar, wasn't it?
That's for Front Row Tar Heels to dissect this week. No, but there haven't been many times where you're standing there going, this is a foregone conclusion. This is not just let's hope they hang on. This is they whipped them.
Right.
Now, it is North Carolina. This does not mean that you're going to win at Clemson. I do think, though, there's opportunities. We can go back to what Bob said. He said two or three more. Miami's on to its number two quarterback. And more than that, with the losses they've suffered, you have to question how bought in or invested are they going to be in the process under Manny. Boston College, which their coach has done a great job, but they're on a backup quarterback and I think a backup kicker. There's other opportunities out there.
you hate to reference things as being your opponents are not at their best. But the reality is, as you look at games that Florida State will not be favored in, Clemson, NC State, Florida, those are teams that are not juggernauts right now. You know, they're not on a roll. They could get on a roll prior to the Florida State game, but they're reeling just a little bit. And maybe you catch them at the right time. As long as this has been going on, I'm happy to make excuses when Florida State wins, as opposed to saying, well, they got lucky. I'd just rather make excuses and take the victory.
Never apologize for a win, Keith. Come on, we've been over this. Never apologize for a win.
Do I have to go to the board and write that 50 times?
Go ahead. I have these. Hey, it's one thing to nitpick. It's another thing to apologize for. Just take it, turn the page, and move on, which I think this is really where the team is. That's what's key about this week and next week. I mean, you don't have to go back very far to see where you laid an egg against a team that you should have beaten in Jacksonville State. So the effort against UMass should not be a slog to a 24-7 win. It should be you come out and you step on their throat at the start of the game, and this game is over in the second quarter. Should it not be?
If you do less than that, it continues that thought process of, you know, is this really working? Are we really doing it right? You know, again, back to my earlier comment, lessons learned versus lessons taught. You know, if you've not learned that and therefore it has to be retaught to you again, that's probably not a real good recipe.
Yeah, I do find it comical, I guess, ironic. I'm not sure the word. When fans are saying, well, you got 2 weeks to get ready for Clemson, you know, spend the UMass week getting ready for Clemson. And I wonder if these are the same folks that blame the coaches for losing to Jacksonville State because they didn't get ready for Jacksonville State and they were busy getting ready for Wake Forest. Like that argument, that logic doesn't work.
You know, one of the things I've found out about coaches is, and this is going to sound terrible, but, you know, if Florida State staff is looking past UMass to get ready for Clemson, then they've got some intellectual problems that are going to require some remedial help with. Now, if you were number one in the country and had been beating everybody by 40 points, I could see that a little bit, but not where this program is right now.
I want to go back to the point you keep hitting on in terms of them playing younger guys, Keith. When you look at the defense, now the two defensive ends that they found in the portal, I don't know that you can hit two home runs again next year like you did, but they're going to need to find some portal help at the defensive end after Keir Thomas and 11 move on. But your tackles should be back inside. The linebackers you're playing, DeLoach is a redshirt sophomore. DJ Lundy is a redshirt freshman. And I know the linebackers aren't great. And then when you look at who's rotating in the secondary, Kevin Knowles, we talked about, as a true freshman. Jerrion Jones, who had the interception, is a redshirt sophomore. Sidney Williams is a redshirt freshman. Jarvis Brownlee is a redshirt freshman. They're playing young. Got Jamie Robinson, who's all over the field and just transferred in. He's a redshirt sophomore. I mean, you've got a lot of guys, and I realize somebody will transfer out, somebody will turn pro that probably shouldn't. That can happen. But your nucleus is largely very, very young.
You know, again, you know, part of the reason for playing youngsters is twofold. Number one, maybe, just maybe, they don't have the bad habits mentally that your upperclassmen have, given what's happened in their careers over the last 3 or 4 years. And number two, there is something to be said for youthful ignorance. You know, the mere fact that you still think you can play with these guys because you were a standout in high school, and that hasn't been disproven yet. So there's a level of ignorance and confidence that can be troublesome, but if it's controlled and if it's appropriately reeled in or reined in occasionally, you know, there's a twofold advantage with these youngsters that maybe you don't have with the upperclassmen.
Well, and I mentioned the guys who've played the most lately, but I mean, Travis Jay is a redshirt freshman. Akeem Dent's a redshirt sophomore. Renardo Green's a redshirt sophomore. Brandon Gant's a redshirt sophomore. Shaheem Brown is a true freshman out of Lake City. I mean, it's really just Miko Dotson that you lose there. So now they've got to build on it. They've got to build on it, or we'll be having the same conversation in 2 weeks, Keith, that we had about 3 weeks ago. So you, right. You do have to you know, we've moved the bar forward, as we talked about, and it doesn't mean that you're always going to be going, making progress, but you just can't, you can't backtrack too much.
The one step forward, two steps back doesn't work when you're trying to get better. To use Coach Norvell's phrase, let's adopt the 1% rule. Let's get 1% better every day and don't work backwards at all.
How are you treating this open week, by the way, Keith? Did you take a few days off? I mean, what are you going to do this weekend?
I have not treated this week any different than the last, I don't know, 70 or 80 weeks, Tommy. I am well within my game plan, and it's a 24/7, 365 operation in the Jones household.
Of doing what?
As little as I can get away with.
That's what I figured. So unfortunately, I call you up twice a week and say, hey, it's time. I need you for an hour, right?
Well, I'm willing to invest 2 hours. Don't ask for more.
No, I won't. I won't. Trust me, 2 hours is enough. All right. Well, we'll do this again next week. Obviously, if you're not aware, we do a post-game version of this show that hits your podcast feed every Sunday. So if you don't subscribe to the podcast, go ahead and do it. It's no matter the platform, you can find the Front Row Noles podcast. And then we come your way each and every Wednesday from noon to one at Real Talk Tallahassee here on 93.3. Keith, I think we're about done.
We'll talk some basketball next week, even though we'll be getting ready for UMass, because tip-off days are Tuesday and Wednesday this week for men and the women, and both teams poised for what I think are going to be exciting seasons.
Yeah, and the all-conference predictions and preseason teams, those are coming out next week, so we can focus there. We're in that transition period, obviously, where basketball comes front and center. But folks are excited about football again, as we should be. That North Carolina game, probably not fair to say it came out of nowhere, but it certainly was a pleasant surprise, I think, for most of us. And we'll put it to bed now. We'll turn the page, and we'll do this again next week, Keith.
Look forward to it.
He's Keith. I'm Tom. Thanks, as always, for tuning in right here to Front Row Noles.